All right, welcome back to the Birmingham Rental Investor. I'm one of your co-hosts, Spencer Sutton. I'm with Matthew Whitaker, and today we've got a special guest, Rob Drum with eXp Realty. And so, Rob, man, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you all for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I got your name. We were just talking about this earlier. I got your name from a local investor here in town who I've got a great relationship with, said we needed to talk. And then I knew the name because I'd seen you post on Bigger Pockets, and you've just been giving a lot of really great information about the real estate market in Birmingham during this COVID-19 situation that we're in right now. So I'm glad we're able to hop on here and talk and learn more about what you're doing and kind of your insights into the market.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. And I mean, with the business that y'all run, I have some questions about what's going on right now with COVID-19 and what you're seeing, because I'm kind of a data nerd. And so those are questions that I'd be interested to ask you too.
Awesome. We'll give you opportunity to do that for sure. So let's kick it off. I mean, I'd like to know, you know, this kind of, because we don't know each other very well, this is kind of how we like to kick it off. I'd love to hear just kind of your story. Like, how did you get into Birmingham real estate?
I guess before I got into real estate, I traded stocks for a company called Bright Trading. It wasn't really like day trading, but it was daily trading. And so I worked there for 7 years. In the process of doing that, I got married. And so the best real estate deal that I've ever done was the first house that I got, and it came with my wife. right. So I can't do a better deal than that.
That's right.
I married my wife. We moved into her house and then moved out and started renting it. And I was still working in trading. And then, we kind of got our feet wet as far as having tenants, repairs.
So what year was this?
Right around the end of 2016. And it was actually, we were building a house. We were planning to move. We had the house under contract to sell, and the buyer wanted to move in early, so we packed up all our stuff, moved out, and then it was a VA loan, and the appraisal came back $30,000 short of the sale price. So I'd kind of wanted to get into, you know, owning rental properties, and I was just like, well, I guess I own a rental property. Yeah. So kind of by accident, but it was something I wanted to do, but hadn't taken that leap. Mm-hmm. Moved out, started renting it, and really just had that one until probably 2018, when I got licensed, started buying more rentals. I guess it was probably end of 2017 when I really got into real estate full time.
So did you have a successful investing kickoff that was the first house that you rented? Everything go correctly?
Yeah. I mean, it really, it went pretty well. Like, when I decided to turn it into a rental, I kind of projected, you know, here's what our expenses will probably be. Here's what our rent will probably be. Here's what it'll be worth in 5 years. Here's where our mortgage will be. And I think we're about year four, and those numbers that I like projected from 4 years ago are pretty much going to work out, I think, to be exactly the investment that I thought it was, which is pretty great. Can't ask better than that.
Yeah. So it sounds like you basically approached it a little bit like you're investing. You're a stock investor and in public equities, I would imagine. And you basically approach rental property like that from a finance side. And so tell me how else investing in stocks and your early career helped you with real estate investing now.
So I'm a real estate agent, and I kind of learned from a mentor kind of this, the power of content marketing. I just started I just started putting out data on the real estate market because I wanted to learn how to be a better investor. What are successful investors doing in our market? You know, I just wanted to learn. And so I started publishing my blog, putting out kind of statistics and stories from what I've been doing or learning and sharing that. And really that's kind of carried my real estate agent business, to where, you know, I don't really do a lot of the things that, some agents do, like cold calling, or I don't really do much direct mail. It's mostly just kind of publishing that content, trying to get it out there. And, a lot of the things I learned about data came from studying stock patterns and, you know, how to find the trends in big Excel models and spreadsheets and that kind of thing. So I do definitely look at it. And even my rental portfolio now is kind of, it's an Excel and it's got projections and all modeled out.
That's great. And the other thing, before we got on, you also are a former collegiate athlete. And so for those of you who don't know, Rob played football at Duke. I'm also interested to know if your athletic career, anything you learned from your athletic career has helped you in your investing.
Absolutely. In investing and in being an agent. So I was offensive lineman, and you know, it's, you get hit a lot and you hit a lot of people. And like I would joke about, like, we'd wake up at 6 a.m. and run our heads into 300-pound guys. Like, that's it's not an easy thing to do. And just in real estate deals, whether you're buying or helping someone else buy or any side you're on, there's all kinds of, like, you're going to have really bad stuff happen, if not every day, every week. If you're doing this, like, frequently, you've always got just stuff that makes normal people want to quit. So I think probably a level of just toughness that I got from playing college sports, that definitely helps with real estate investing and being an agent and just full-time entrepreneur.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. You know, our business, property management, is a grind. And you need to know how it is. I mean, you know, owning rental property can be tough sometimes. But you know, as I was looking over your blog, something I noticed is kind of a focus that you put on, or an importance you put on, setting goals. And I think that's real important for people who want to be investors. We talk to investors all the time, who are calling usually from out of state to learn more about the market, things like that. How important is goal setting in what you've been able to accomplish, and like even what you do, kind of day to day and year to year?
Yeah. I mean, I really use them as kind of like a set the course of what I'm trying to accomplish, like the vision for where I want to go. And then I'm very opportunistic about what I see in front of me. Like, for example, this year I didn't have a lot of goals to really buy much real estate. I was just focusing on other things. And with this virus that's broken out, I've kind of just seen some opportunities that popped up and shifted focus a little bit to where I see some things that would fit into a longer term goal. Yeah, I think, really for anyone who's trying to be successful in anything, like, setting goals is going to be huge for
that. Talk about when you do that. Do you do that annually? Do you review them quarterly? Talk about when you review these.
Yeah, I definitely spend a lot of time around December, January, kind of end of the year, beginning of the year. Spend a lot of time trying to think about which way I'm going to go. Honestly, I don't review them that often. I put a lot of time and thought into that period of time. And at the end of the year, it's amazing how many of them I hit. And considering I don't always look at it, like, I know I should look at it every day. If you That's what a lot of books say. But for me, I write them and, you know, they're still in my mind.
Yeah. Talk about how you come up with them. I mean, do you set like a certain number of homes? Do you set a certain path? Because there's all different ways that people come up with annual goals. So talk a little bit about how you come up with that vision for the year.
I think it's varied every year of my career, really. And sometimes, like last year, I set a goal. I think I wanted to have 70 closings across my broker's business and my own personal buying and selling. And I think I hit 58. But the way I set that one was, I was like, what's one business goal that if I hit it, I would be very happy with the year and be very like satisfied in a good position going forward. And that was kind of it. And I was like, even if I don't hit that, I would still be in a good place.
Yeah. If you came close, which you did.
Yeah.
It's a lot of houses.
It is. Yeah.
Talk about the focus of your business, your agency business, brokerage business. Who do you focus on? Who do you like to sell houses to? Is it a wide variety of people? Are you very intentional about who you help? Be curious about that.
Yeah. It is, I would say it's a lot of investors. The kind of content that I put out there attracts investors, and I like, I've kind of developed a way of working with, especially out-of-state investors that, you know, works from my perspective and works well from their perspective. So that's definitely a niche that I try to do well at. You know, I've been able to do a couple of these portfolio transactions for owners that have maybe 3 to 10 single family properties. So I've kind of specialized in that a little bit, done a couple multifamily. And then in the summer, like this time of year, I think I've got, I mean, I'll probably have 5 or 6 people that are buying their home to live in. Some of them are looking for kind of a fixer, but some of them are just, you know, looking for a nice place. And so I, you know, are people that I'm close to.
So how often, you mentioned, you know, your marketing or your marketing through content creation, how often are you putting out content? And then are these people that read your content, or are they just really kind of reaching out through the blog, scheduling a time to talk? Cause I saw that you had that, you know, you had the ability to do that. So how often, what's your content schedule?
It's varied. My goal has always been weekly, but honestly, sometimes I get really busy and it won't happen weekly, but through this kind of COVID-19, I got back on a pretty good schedule. It's really picked up my business to where, I mean, May is going to be a huge month that I don't think it would have been if I hadn't been really consistently trying to put out good content for people.
What's changed during this time, COVID-related, about buying a house? What are some things that have changed that a month or two ago would have been, you know, very traditional? How has that changed?
Closings have definitely changed. I haven't done one of these yet, but I've seen a lot of them on Instagram and Facebook where they have these drive-by closings where you just drive up in your car, they bring out the documents. So that's pretty different. And I had a buyer today talking about, he's kind of excited that a first-time home buyer, husband and wife, are buying his house because it was their first house and now they're moving up. And so he's kind of excited about it, and he wanted to be sure that he could talk to them at closing and just tell them, you know, that he's excited for them, wish them luck. And I was like, well, I can't guarantee that we're not going to have one of these drive-by closings, because that's kind of common right now. But I think I got a closing attorney that's doing them in the office still, so hopefully they can meet each other.
Talk about your success. Like, what does a typical day in your life look like as you go through the week? Is every day very routine? Is every day just kind of reactive? Tell us what, and how is that, how do you attribute that to your success in both investing and being having so many closing as an agent?
What I don't think we've gotten into yet is that in the last 3 years, so I have three kids, and the oldest about to turn 4 in July. Wow. So I spend
no sleep, Ben. That's I can answer.
You work
question.
All night.
I haven't been sleeping the last 3 years. I try to a lot of the. That time I've been trying to help with the kids and help us all survive. And so today, like, there's been times where I've had kind of a regimented morning routine as far as working out, having quiet time, and, you know, like all the kind of things that recharge you and help you be more effective. Right now, I haven't really, can't go to the gym, like things throw me out of my routine all the time. And as far as business, like, it's a lot of, it is actually a lot of reactive, which, you know, just whatever comes at me that day, you know, check the box and move on to the next box for the next day. And which sometimes I like, and then sometimes I'm like, man, I wish I just had like a regular routine. I need like a regular time to do paperwork and that kind of thing. But
do you have a team, or are you kind of solo?
So I kind of have a team, and it may get more formalized in the next year. So I've got a group of agents that I'm mentoring, and that's part of the reason that I came to eXp was to really invest in other agents and try to help them learn the business and teach them some investing too. You know, I think it's kind of the beauty of our model at eXp is that it makes it worth my time to do that.
Can you expound on the model? I'm curious. I don't know the model.
Yeah. So when we made the move to eXp, it was like, I was getting my broker's license, and I was either going to grow the brokerage or start my own brokerage. What I looked at is, what does it mean to be a real estate broker and own a brokerage? And there's like four things you're doing, and that's developing agents, attracting and recruiting agents. And then you're also keeping track of all the paperwork. And then you've also got like the legal liability. And what we saw with eXp was that you could eliminate the two of those that are not very fun and keep the attracting, retaining, growing a group of agents and really, you know, generating revenue that's kind of in the same vicinity of if you owned your own brokerage.
How does that differ from the Keller Williams model? Is it a similar model? I'm just curious. I don't have the context.
Well, it's not really similar. I mean, so eXp is set up with 50% of all revenue that's generated by the company goes back to the agents through this revenue sharing program. And it's very clear. It's very defined. It can be a very significant amount of money. And it's based on revenue, not profit. So if you look at your balance sheet, it's based on the amount of income, not what's left after everyone gets paid. It's pretty different. And I could tell you stories of some of the people in our company that are, you know, just doing really, really well from that model.
From being able to develop other people's success, you have success too.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about one of the things I think you've done really well, which I think is important to our audience, is I've always told people, don't quit your day job. Don't do what me and Spencer did. Go out, quit our day job. I mean, everybody wants to be investing maybe where we are now, but you do not want to get here how we got here. It was brutal. 2007, 2008, 2009, which we've well documented on the show. We almost lost our tails. But one of the things you do is you're an agent by day and you're an investor at night, you know, I know, what percentage of your time do you spend on your day job, which let's say being an investor agent, and what percentage do you spend on being an investor?
It varies. I mean, it swings. Last year I was doing a lot of flips, and so those take up some time. I was buying a lot more properties last year. So last year I was probably 50-50. And this year I would definitely say I'm more like 85% agent. We saw the opportunity with eXp, and I've really been working on that side of the business and focusing on that. So, and now that COVID-19 is kind of maybe creating some opportunities for good purchases, maybe I'll swing back to make it more 60-40 or 50-50. But yeah, I kind of just whatever pants I want to wear that day.
That's pretty good. And do you feel like you have any issues? You represent a lot of investors. You're an investor yourself. How do you manage the opportunities to make sure that you're still taking care of your investors, but you're also managing your own opportunities? How does that work?
Yeah. And that's a question that I get asked a pretty good amount. And honestly, I have a couple just ethical rules about that, you know, if somebody ever asked me about a deal, like a client or even a potential client asked me about it, it's off the table for me to purchase. I'm going to help them try to buy it. And I helped somebody buy a 24 unit apartment complex that was a really good deal. The bank loved the deal. Like it was good, but you know, he asked me about it and I told him like, it's really good. Like you need to buy this.
But if you don't, call me first.
I was like, we have a deadline of Monday at 2 PM to get offer in. And if you don't do the offer, I'm going to.
Yeah. My deadline's 150 and yours is,
That's great.
So that, and I mean, I see a lot of deals like, you know, just regular run of the mill, like pretty solid properties, and not everyone's looking for the same thing. Not everyone's looking for what I'm looking for. So it really is, I don't think it's that much of a issue.
How many units are you up to now? You personally own
29, and I'm buying 2 this month.
That's great. You know, you mentioned a couple of times in as we've been talking about potential opportunity opening up here. So kind of where we are in the market, and something that you've been doing is giving these updates on bigger pockets every single week. So kind of give us a snapshot. Tell us what's going on in the real estate market here in Birmingham, for the past couple of months.
So when this whole thing hit, I kind of had the realization of just that it was going to be, you know, we're shutting down sports events and schools and all this stuff is going to shut down. And there was like a weekend where I had that realization, like, you know, this is going to be tons of people are out of work. Like, what's going to happen to all these rentals I have? Are people going to be able to buy houses? All these kind of questions. And so is it going to make prices go down? And that's what really started me hardcore into looking and tracking the numbers every week. And also tracking, I try to include stuff about stimulus, because a lot of my clients and agents and people I work with every day are business people. So I kind of tilt the stimulus opportunities towards business people. But what I'm seeing in the market is really a minimal drop in closings. So I really think over this whole 6 week period, we're running at about 80% of the amount of closings that we would have had same 6 week period last year. So a small drop in volume of closings, in prices we're still well above, 8 to 10% above where we were at the same time last year, which is very strong growth. That's a continuation of what we saw in February and March, and we'll get the numbers for April this week. I'll pull those. So I really think appreciation-wise, we're doing great, and I don't see any reason why that would stop. I talked to people who are looking to buy for their own homes, and a lot of them are saying, like, this is the breaking point on the house that I live in. I'm done, totally done with where we live. We got to move. Or they're getting pregnant and they're like, we need an extra room. So I think there's going to be a lot of buyer demand getting stirred up because of this.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people will probably get pregnant as a result of this COVID-19 stuff. Everybody's sitting at home. So maybe everybody will be upgrading the number of bedrooms right. they need, and that'll, for us house people, will be create some more demand.
Good. Yeah.
I'm curious, when you talk to out-of-state investors and they're asking you questions about Birmingham, I'd love to hear your Birmingham pitch. Why Birmingham? Why, if I called you, why would I invest in Birmingham?
Yeah. So I think there's a couple of really key points. One, we're seeing like a capital rotation from other markets, like that have been good cash flow markets, high yield markets, places like Indianapolis that have seen a lot of appreciation, and now people looking to buy there can't find the type of returns that they've been used to. And they'll reach out to me and ask about Birmingham and get interested in our market. So that's something that we've been seeing. It's actually really had an effect on the prices on that lower end of the market, around 100, below 100,000. Those the appreciation on those has been really significantly higher than the higher end of the market. So that's, we did a research article on that, research post on that. And then another thing is that in the past 6 months, I've probably talked to three people who aren't from Birmingham, but they moved here to start their app or start their startup or, you know, something that's kind of tech involved, which it was kind of a shock to me. I was like, why? I mean, doesn't seem like the place that you would go for that, but I think we're becoming that. And so that's definitely a good sign as far as continued growth and being that cool city, that next, maybe that next Nashville, or that's what kind of the buzz from a lot of people. A lot of people already sold by the time I talked to them. They've done their research, and but if they're kind of trying to choose between different markets, that's my pitch on Birmingham.
Are most of these people institutional buyers, individuals? Who's buying houses right now in Birmingham?
For my clients, mostly individuals. We'll sell like listings. If I'm doing a listing between 90 and 150, it's almost guaranteed to get an institutional buyer make an offer on it. And, but most of my clients are individuals. I would say most of them are professionals. Everything varies, but most of them are pretty successful professionals.
And what areas are they buying in Birmingham? Just kind of general, you can either use zip codes, cities. Where are people buying a lot of rental properties right now?
So it varies. I mean, I have people that, I have one client who's bought three in Hoover. And that's just kind of his bread and butter. And some people are looking more towards like what we would call B class areas. That's like the kind of the, all the suburbs except the southern suburbs is kind of the way I'd explain that. And then like some of the houses that you can buy for $60,000 or less, I have some people that are looking for those. I usually recommend that they try to get a portfolio of them or be able to buy a couple, because just the volatility of that type of tenant and property mix that could make you not have a good experience. If you just had one, you might get.
Well, I don't know. I bought 10 at one time, and I had a very volatile experience with all 10 of them. So I don't know if that's...
That was operator error, though.
There's no doubt. Those were my very first rentals to ever, my first rentals to ever buy, with a package of 10 for $100,000.
Spencer sold me my first rental, and
yours was a beauty compared to what I bought.
It was your fault. Talk about, because this really parlays into what another question I wanted to ask is, talk about some mistakes you see newbie investors making in the market when they're getting into rental property.
I think trying to go from a standing start to a sprint as far as owning real estate, being a real estate investor, I think you're going to be a lot better off. Like if you've never even bought your own home, which I have plenty of clients who can't afford to buy a home in the market they live in, but they're looking to invest. And so they look at Birmingham, and if you're trying to buy something at a steep discount that needs a $30,000 to $40,000 renovation, and you don't have any experience with, you know, even if it's just owning your own home, it can be a lot to bite off, and you really need to have that kind of confidence to push through and take the next step that's in front of you, and like trying to do buy something really cheap, get it renovated. And then like the burn method that they talk on Bigger Pockets, especially if you're trying to use hard money to do that too, it's just a very kind of a long shot way of investing. Whereas if you buy a house, it meets the 1% rule where rent is equal to 1% of the purchase price. And it's already like a family was living in it before. It's well maintained. You can rent it the next day. That kind of, you're just going to have probably a very good experience, very smooth experience with a house that's maybe $120,000, rents for $1,200. We just did a deal like that for a client in Pinson, and I think he's going to do really well on it. And it's nothing special. We didn't have to find contractors to get quotes and like inspect a whole lot of everything. So, you know, that's one way to look at it. I do have clients who, you know, have never owned a house, and they used hard money to buy a foreclosure, and they're renovating it right now. So it happens, but I think it's a mistake to force yourself just because you think burn method is the best or owner financing is the best or whatever, to not just get in the game and then see where that leads you.
Talk about successes. Do you see some of your more successful investors doing things that you think lead to their success that maybe you've emulated in your own investing?
Definitely. I mean, working with other investors has definitely made me better. I don't want to say like taking risks, but I think it's more the ones that I see having success are not like with the burn method, for example. They know that real estate is for the most part going to be very, very conservative, and they don't have to, you know, analyze every single little detail of a potential deal. They just know that it'll kind of work out over time. And like that's something that, I've definitely seen, is that just like, I use a lot of rules of thumb, for how to analyze a property. I don't break out all the, with single family, you can do that. Like you don't have to break out all the property taxes and insurance and all that. It's just going to work out about the same no matter which properties it is, especially once you have a couple of them.
Yeah, that's one of the things that a lot of investors are pretty excited about, is just low property taxes here in Birmingham. You mentioned that. I know that's not exactly what you were talking about, but that's another positive for the Birmingham market, is just how low property taxes are. It makes it easy to find cash flowing properties.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I will say that I feel like my most successful clients are fairly well capitalized. I mean, it's investing, so you need to have capital to invest.